You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
I'm Cornelia Scherber, and I'm very excited to be here today with two of my colleagues from Chemical Market Analytics. We've been working in the chemical industry for decades now, and today we're going to talk about the down cycle that the industry is going through and talk a little bit about why the industry, which has poured more than $1 trillion into new capacity over the past decade, now finds itself looking to shut down plants, slash capital expenditures, and in some case, look for merger partners. Today's episode is hosted by a few of us from Chemical Market Analytics and the consulting team. So let's introduce ourselves. As I said, I'm Cornelia Scherber. I worked in the industry in a variety of roles, from engineering research to business analysis, strategic planning, logistics, finance, and I've been with CMA and Opus here for the past 20 years, working in roles analyzing the industry, systems development, and most recently in consulting. So with me today are Chuck Carr and Z Locke, and I'll let them introduce themselves to you.
Well, thanks, Cornelia. Yeah, I'm Chuck Carr. I've been in the industry for quite a while as well, for over 40 years now. With this company, I've been with this company for nearly 20 years, background chemical engineering. And then most of my roles here have been in the market analysis role, first in the olefin side, and then in the inorganics, chloralkali vinyls, and then same as Cornelia, most recently in the consulting side of the business. Go ahead, Z.
Thanks, Chuck. So yes, my name is Z Locke. I'm also a member of the consulting team here at CMA Opus. Like Cornelia and Chuck, I've been a chemicals consultant all my career. So that will be close to 20 years by now. So that has allowed me to work on, you know, a range of market studies, feasibility studies, M&A transaction support, commercial and technical due diligence type projects for various clients across the different petrochemical value chains over the years.
All right. Thank you, guys. So we're going to talk about the down cycle and some of the ramifications of that. But Chuck, would you first give us a little bit of background and what led up to this cycle that we're in today?
Okay. No, I'm happy to. In fact, you know, maybe we even just go all the way back to, say, 1967 in the movie The Graduate, you know, who was it? Mr. McGuire gives Dustin Hoffman, who was, you know, Ben, gives him, you know, advice. You know, he says, just one thing, plastics. And it turns out actually he was right. In some instances, is that plastics grew at multiples of GDP, you know, over decades. You can look around yourself, you know, now, anytime you go to the store, anything in your house, building materials, your furniture, appliances, food that you buy is packaged in plastic, which, you know, eventually comes from feedstocks that are basically oil and gas or coal type related materials. So, you know, the growth came about because plastics are lightweight, they're sturdy, they don't break down. So compared to, you know, maybe things like that were wood or things that were cast iron or some pipes, you know, now using PVC pipes or polyethylene pipes. So the growth came, you know, over, you know, decades and decades. Now, you would normally see cycles in the industry. You would see overcapacity built, but then the demand would grow fast enough that basically it just mopped up that excess capacity. And then you'd be back in the peak of the cycle and margins were good. And then people would invest again and so forth. Well, we've kind of come to a stage now where instead of demand growing at multiples of GDP. Now we're more growing, say, at GDP levels. And the other thing that's happened is as technology advances, you see the size of facilities and plants have gotten bigger and bigger. So every time you add a new plant, that's a big chunk of capacity that comes in the market. And basically, you know, if you have multiple companies building at one time, you know, there can be an overabundance. So when you kind of look at most recent years, and way China's built, which has been substantial, you get to a point where, you know, operating rates get really low because you have such an excess of capacity coming in the market and demand's not growing quite as fast as it used to. It's only growing at, say, GDP levels. And then you have interruptions in there, such as COVID, right? COVID was positive in some aspects for plastics, but also it was negative in some aspects, maybe for durable goods. So you kind of had a whole lead up here to this kind of a situation we're in now, where we just got an overabundance of capacity that's been built or still coming, going to come on stream, and a demand growth that's not near as what you had in the past. So
yeah, that's really helpful, Chuck. So, but in the last, say, decade, there's really been a lot more capacity built, maybe even more than, you know, in the prior decade. So what drove all that demand being, I mean, all that capacity being added, especially like in the US and in China? Why so much capacity being added?
Well, if we look at, say, the Middle East and the US, that was a feedstock advantage type play. In other words, maybe demand wasn't growing as fast in those areas, but they had an abundance of feedstock. So in the Middle East, with all the oil production, you get a lot of natural gas. And with natural gas, you get a lot of natural gas liquids, such as ethane. And ethane is a really, really good feedstock just to make ethylene. And you have propane and stuff to make propylene. And these are some of the key base chemicals that go into making a lot of these plastics. In the U.S., what kind of was the trigger was back in the 2010 timeframe or so, you had all of a sudden fracking and the, what, you know, Mitchell Energy came, and, you know, the U.S. was in the early 2000s, all of a sudden, you know, we were going to be short of natural gas. We were going to be short of oil and stuff. We were reversing pipelines. We were looking at building liquefied natural gas import facilities to supply the natural gas to the market. And all of a sudden, this genie was let out of the bottle by Mitchell Energy when they discovered the horizontal drilling with the advanced fracking just unleashed shale oil and shale gas into the market. And from there, now we've gone from that needing to import natural gas to one of the largest exporters of natural gas. And with that come a lot of feedstocks that can be used for plastics, like, or for making the base chemicals that go into plastics, like ethane and propane are the two key examples. So anyway, that's kind of how we got there from those places. When you look at China, it's just the demand growth there was just so big, and they had such a huge appetite that basically they just started building plants. So it's just been an enormous growth from nearly nothing in the 1990s from a chemical industry in China to today. They just basically dwarf everybody else to probably 50% or more of the capacity globally.
So lots of capacity added in the U.S. because of feedstock advantage. In the Middle East, same thing. And then China becoming self-sufficient, so adding a lot of capacity. So, and then you mentioned slowing demand. So now we're in a trough. So maybe explain, what does that mean when we say we're in a trough? What does that mean for the chemical industry?
It's basically when operating rates have been reduced significantly because there's such an excess amount of capacity. And so what happens then is it's a supply demand balance. There's way more supply can be provided to the market than there is demand. So margins get squeezed below the laggard producer's cash costs. And so that's where companies have to really turn back operating rates, and you see even assets shutting down. So the margins basically get really squeezed low.
What led to this? I mean, did the industry not see slowing demand? I mean, what led to so much overbuild of capacity?
Well, in some instances, it's if you have the ample feedstocks, and if you're on the low end of the cost curve, such as what the U.S. or Middle East is, you're looking to monetize those feedstocks. And in some instances, like ethane, there's not another use for ethane other than to leave it in the natural gas. And the problem with that is you can only leave so much in the natural gas, because then the gas becomes what we would call too hot for use in the wide distribution network. So you're extracting this ethane that becomes really, really low value because you have to move it and you've got to do something with it. So one way is you monetize it in the market where it's produced. Another way is you could export it, but it is pretty expensive to export. We are exporting some ethane out of the U.S., so some feedstock, but the majority of it is getting consumed in the U.S., and they've been building plants to consume it because it has to have a home. And then when you look at, say, China, they just have been driving towards self-sufficiency, you know, basically building as fast as they can in order to satisfy their thirst for the feedstocks and the plastics and the chemicals to make widgets, which then have been exported around the world. So that's that piece. And then, as I mentioned before, the size of the plants have gotten larger and larger as technology has evolved. And so every time new plants are added, it's just another big chunk of capacity that comes into the market that adds to the supply.
Right. And another thing is, it just takes a long time to build these plants. These are not something, they're expensive, takes 5 to 7 years, maybe even a decade to, plan, get approval for, and bring a plant on stream. And once that is in place, it's a little bit hard and expensive to reverse. So,
and it's not like the different companies in the industry are coordinating their build efforts, right? They're independent companies that are, looking at their own future and their own margins and what they're doing. So, when there are margins, companies tend to run towards it. And you're right, from the planning stage to when the plant is on the ground, and you're not talking, a few million dollars, you're talking several billion dollars when you're adding these plants. So it's and it takes a while.
Approval process and all that is not something that's easy to do. Okay, so what's going to bring us out of the trough? What about demand growing? It's growing slower, but is what's the long term outlook for chemical demand?
Well, the long term outlook is still growing. Is it growing? It's not growing at multiples of GDP, but you basically have to mop up the excess capacity, or the laggards, the smaller plants, the ones that aren't making the margin, that maybe have negative positions, eventually shut down, right? You have to shutter older capacity. And some of these assets are, could be 50, 60 years old at this point. And if they're not, don't have an advantage feedstock or some type of advantage, then, they would eventually close. So that's one of the positions Europe finds itself in right now, not having the advantage feedstocks nor a growing, very, very growing demand. It's their demand growth is very, very slow.
So is that where we're seeing a lot of the announcements about rationalization? Is it mainly in Europe?
At this point, it is. Yeah, and Z-May, you might want to comment. Z's actually located in London, so he's been kind of at the forefront of that. So I don't know, Z, if you have some comments around the rationalization side of things and what's going on in Europe.
Yeah, no, I think you mentioned a few of the key points there, Chuck, right? I mean, the asset base in the petrochemical industry in Europe is generally, very dated. So, and obviously the region doesn't have a cost advantage in terms of feedstock. Demand growth is weak and in some cases even declining. Yeah, so producers there are struggling in terms of, if they need to spend a certain amount of investment to refresh their assets or, production capacities, do they want to do that or do they, shut down? Especially since, as you mentioned earlier, Chuck, you've got many producers in the US and the Middle East with cheap feedstock who have been investing and who are, exporting the lower cost product into Europe. So the region really faces, this elements of competition And, you know, we in the consulting team here, we've done a lot of work in this space in the last few years, you know, supporting producers who are wondering what they should be doing with their assets, what are their options from a strategic point of view. A few large chemical companies have announced that they are looking to sell their assets in Europe, and we've been fortunate enough to be able to support on some of those assignments. So yeah, so that's, you know, that's where the industry is in now in Europe.
What about some of the regulations? Because that's also been more of an issue in Europe than maybe other parts of the world. So maybe you can say a little bit about the impact of some of the, you know, regulations in Europe that the chemical industry is facing.
Yeah, I mean, the you know, I think that when we talk about regulation in you know, in the chemical industry, you know, a lot of the regulation now has been focused on, you know, sustainability, limiting single-use plastics, increasing the use of recyclates in plastics and so on. And obviously that will impact, you know, the demand for virgin polymer. You know, obviously that forces producers of conventional plastics to rethink their strategies, to start thinking about how to implement sustainability strategies. We've seen huge amount of growth in you know, investment in recycling, in new recycling technologies, production of bio-based and other sustainable routes to low carbon chemicals and so on. So that's what is also going on at the same time. You know, within the industry.
So what about electric vehicles? You know, that's a big electric hybrid vehicles. Does that have a big impact as, you know, consumers move more towards those? Does that use less chemicals or does that have any big impact?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And, you know, the automotive sector has, you know, been one of the largest consumers of, you know, petrochemicals. Across the different polymers, and if you think about, you know, the main polymers like, you know, polypropylene, polycarbonate, polyethylene, they all have applications, you know, in automotives and cars. You know, that brings to mind a study that we've done recently as well in this space, where, you know, we've looked at, you know, obviously, you know, electric vehicles are on the rise. It is a lot more expensive to produce electric vehicles in Europe compared to other locations such as China, where there's lower labor cost. There is a much more established supply chain in terms of, you know, things like batteries for the electric vehicles and so on. You know, the study that we did really looked at, you know, what would happen if production of, you know, automotives and electric vehicles were to move entirely, you know, from Europe to China, if all producers of vehicles in Europe were to shut down because of the cost disadvantage and everything ended up being produced in other locations such as China, what impact that would have on the petrochemical industry in Europe and what that would mean to petrochemical producers.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about rationalization and, you know, what's driving that. What about mergers and acquisitions? Anything, you know, is that going to be a trend now that, you know, we're companies are facing low margins in some cases? Chuck, anything that you would add about that?
Yeah, there's, you know, it kind of can happen in times of you're in the peak. And so maybe companies are looking to sell assets that are really good, but they want to cash out of a business. Whereas now we're in the trough. So maybe companies are looking at assets that say don't get enough attention on their side that, as Z was mentioning, may take a lot of capital investment to bring them up to, you know, what may be a modern facility or their business. And maybe if that could be combined with somebody else's business who has something similar, you know, they could grow the size of that business and get some more economies of scale. So it kind of happens at both ends of the spectrum. I've seen a lot of interest from, you know, private equity and third-party capital at buying maybe assets that are distressed. And a lot of times they'll buy assets or multiple from multiple companies and then assemble them or, you know, try to basically clean them up and then wait out till the cycle moves up up again and then try to repackage or spin it off as another company. So seeing a lot of that as well. Z, I don't know if you have any other comments around that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting time now because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you've got many producers who are looking to, you know, in this time, exit the market and sell assets or businesses. But at the same time, what that means is, you know, if you are a buyer looking to enter the market or enter a certain business or value chain in the chemical space, that could mean favorable valuations, you know, if you're looking to acquire a business, which is why, you know, we've worked with, you know, companies, producers, as well as, you know, private equity and so on, who are looking to enter the market, screen potential candidates for acquisition within a certain space, that sort of thing, because, you know, companies do acknowledge that this could be a good time for them to enter the market.
Yeah, it's interesting. One thing I wanted to note is you have to think about plastics and chemicals of how easy they are to move around the world or transport, right? So plastics by nature are very, you know, easy to move from one region or country to another, because basically you package them in 25-kilogram bags or in bulk, and they can move, and then they're easy to transport inland, even in those on trucks and stuff. Whereas something like a feedstock, which might be like ethane, that's a lot more costlier and difficult to move and takes specialized equipment. And then some of the base chemical feedstocks as well, such as ethylene or propylene, they're much more costly. You have to have pressurized vessels and stuff to move them. And there's only so many locations you can unload them. So that's another kind of a reasoning why there's investments in different locations and what type of materials do they make and then transport. So one of the things on the, as Z mentioned about the automotive industry, was to move away if it's like electric vehicles or whatever the reason is. But one of the things that we've seen, and COVID even helped accelerate the move or the deceleration in the amount of gasoline, so fuel and diesel that's used. So you have multiple things happening. You have urbanization, you have more work from home, you have more efficiency on the automobile, whether that's just the internal combustion engine being more efficient because there's rules or laws around, you know, increasing the mileage on it. And then along with electric vehicles starting to get a bigger and bigger piece of the new car sales. It takes a while for all the automobiles in the fleet to turn over. But what's happening is in the U.S., we think we've already peaked on fuel demand. In fact, COVID, we saw a big downturn and we've never quite recovered. And on a global basis, our guys in the energy group, we have a whole energy team, they believe 2031 will be at peak fuels demand. Doesn't mean peak crude demand, but peak fuels demand. And the reason for that is because, not peak crude, is because what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to keep getting more and more feedstocks for chemicals from crude oil. So the actual growth in crude oil demand will be coming from the chemical feedstock side. So the need for more naphtha, which is one of the key feedstocks to make ethylene and various other chemicals. That whole automotive or transport fuel outlook is going to have an impact on the chemical industry, especially on the feedstock side. So then you kind of pivot towards refineries, which are processing the crude oil, and they will have to kind of retool what materials they make, how much gasoline or diesel they're making versus making some naphthas for chemical feedstock. So there's a whole gamut there that can be explored, which we've done some work in that area as well.
All right. So lots going on. There's, you know, we're in a transition, we're in a trough, but chemical demand should be growing in the future. So, you know, all of these things, you know, do create opportunity. I appreciate everybody for listening, and Chuck and Z for sharing their insights. If you ever have questions about the chemical industry or the energy industry, you know, reach out to anybody at CMA or Opus, and, you know, we're happy to, you know, give you some of our insight.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.